is my clubhouse.
How long do I have to answer this? If I start with, for my life, I've had a bit of trauma when I was young. I don't think the family would have got through it if it weren't for the clubhouse.
There's certain things that happen, or it might be in a certain way where my teammates are the perfect place to go.
And then these people act as like the scaffolding of security. We all do act as that for each other, I hope.
The clubhouse is just the environment, not necessarily a place.
What's lovely about our little WhatsApp group is that we can share, you know, stories, we can share things that make us laugh, you know, frustrations.
Sometimes it's my friends that I grew up with, go back to my old area, forgetting I'm a rugby player, forgetting I'm a non-exec, forgetting I'm a chairman.
It's like being around people that are going through similar things, or that just understand and are just there as like a bit of a shoulder to cry on, or someone to like big you up.
Hello and welcome to the Where's Your Clubhouse podcast, brought to you by Speakeasy Club. Now, my name's Simon Clark. I'm founder of Speakeasy and also host for this very first series, and I am super excited. Now, the Where's Your Clubhouse podcast, we sit down with some incredible people, predominantly involved in the world of sport. We talk through their life stories, really. We talk about the good, the bad and the ugly. And we ask everybody that one question: where's your clubhouse? Where's that one place for you that you can be the best version of you? You can not feel judged. You can just feel happy and you have a bloody good time whilst doing it. It's incredible to hear some of the responses, and it's a question I don't think we really spend a lot of time asking ourselves, really. So I can't wait to share some of the responses. Now, we couldn't be here without a brilliant, brilliant partner in Mentality Clothing. I'm so excited to join up with two young lads who are sharing a passion, creating a community, investing finances back into a brilliant charity in Mind Cymru. But they developed this incredible clothing line, which is cool, it's fun, it's accessible. They do big sizes for big chaps like myself. And they are just two really, really good guys trying to give back to the community. So we're delighted to offer Speakeasy 15% off. Check out their website, www.mentalityclothing.co.uk. Honestly, there's some really cool stuff on there, so please do check it out. Now, before I get into it, please, it's so important that we get your feedback on these things. Who do you want to see? How do these conversations go? Is there anything that lands with you guys? That's where we want to be, and try to pull out some of the tricky stuff as well. And hopefully there's some really relatable bits in there too. We'd love to hear from you. Please leave a review. Please leave a comment. Please share it with your friends and family. And we'd love to hear your feedback. You can follow us on all good social media platforms and some rubbish ones at Speakeasy Club 1. Now, let's get into the latest episode. Without further ado, sit back, relax, and let's find out where's your clubhouse. Rhys Batchel, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us. Well, it's good morning your end. I get this wrong. What time is it over there with you in New Zealand at the moment?
It is 10 to 9 on Sunday morning. 10 to 8 with you on Saturday night, is that right?
Absolutely. I try not to go into the old Peter Kay bit about what the weather's like with you, but it looks absolutely brilliant.
It's fantastic. It is fantastic. It's too good for me, frankly, to be honest, with my complexion.
Hey, I'm sure you're taking advantage. You were just telling me, tell us a bit about your morning so far, because you were telling me just before we started about your kind of routine in the last couple of hours. Sounds awful.
Oh, it's been beautiful. Yeah, it's been okay. So I'm lucky enough. I live in a lovely part of Dunedin called St Clair, a pretty quiet suburb, and the house is 5-10 minutes away from the beach. So I wandered down this morning, had a jump in the sea. Very cold. The sky is blue, but the sea is very, very cold. And I suspect it will be very, very cold. It's next stop, South Pole from here. But yeah, it's been a nice leisurely way to start the morning before jumping on with you.
Excellent. Well, I won't keep you too much longer, and we'll definitely get into a bit of the New Zealand life and what it's like being involved with the Highlanders in a little bit. But first of all, just to kick things off, take us right back to the beginning. Where did it all begin for you, and what was it like growing up?
So I'd be really lucky. Type family unit, mum and dad, older brother is 4 years old. And from a sporting point of view, it started for me. My brother was a very good swimmer, very, very good swimmer, competitive. And so, you know, inevitably he went along and he did a bit of swimming and tried to do that. He was a very good footballer. So he sort of get into football. And then he decided that he wanted to try his hand at rugby. Now, rugby at that time was on a Saturday morning at Crick, which clashed with football for me, which was also on a Saturday morning. So we compromised and did what the older brother wanted to do. And I went along to rugby training. And I mean, I don't recall this, but fortunately, one of my best mates, his old man, used to coach us. Later, he was my housemate when they finished university and I moved out from home. And apparently, the story goes that I turned around to him in the first rugby session first training session and sort of tapped him on the back and went, "I'm going to be a professional rugby player." And as you can imagine, the response was, "Oh, are you? Oh, there we are. Well done." Because how many 7-year-olds tell their coach at that time that they want to play professional rugby? And it's been a fairly twisty, bumpy path to get there. And that's sort of fortunately where I've ended up. And it's taken me around the world, currently taking me to the bottom of New Zealand. And it's been awesome. And then from there, you know, you go play rugby for Crick, school at Melling Griffith, in Whitchurch, Welsh medium education, Melling Griffith to Blantyre. You get drawn into the culture and the rugby and everything that goes with Blantyre. Amazing school. Blantyre left after, was due to go on a gap year, was going to go to Shaunavon Lake School, which is a private school based on Vancouver Island in Canada. Okay. Awful part of the world. Dreadful. Don't know why I wanted to go there. Didn't quite make the gap year, but ended up at Cardiff Blues instead. Did 5 years at Cardiff, 7 years at the Scarlets, and now I've ended up here.
So it's been Welsh caps in between.
A few couple of Welsh caps in between, and right at the start of the year on the Seven Circuit, traveling the world, and what else have I fitted in between? I gained to the World 15 against the Barbas, which was a proper imposter syndrome moment.
That's something I definitely want to come back to later because we've got a little chat about that. We're going to go back to those days at Crick and just what was it like going through the kind of ranks and the types of coaches and people. But just listening to yourself kind of talk about that journey to the point where you are now and everything in between, what does it feel like hearing about that kind of career that you're having? It's not that you've had, so, you know, you're having that career. Yeah. Is it something you can kind of get your head around?
It seems... Well, I suppose that was definitely what I always wanted. You know, there was like this determination, obviously, but like this unwavering belief that I won't play rugby professionally, but also this constant, fear is too strong a word, but this constant questioning of whether or not I would be good enough, which is fairly contradicting, really, Yeah, it's been pretty cool. It's been pretty cool. I mean, I'm sure, like anybody, everybody's, like anybody who plays, or most people who play professional sport, you're probably a bit greedy, and therefore you always want more, and you always want more yesterday. But equally, I think on the whole, if you'd have offered something like this to the Reese that turned up at 7 years of age and tapped his toe on the back and said, "I want to play professional rugby," or "I'm going to play professional rugby," I think he'd probably have been like, "Yeah, that's a pretty good deal. I'll take that."
What about those early days at Crick then? When was there a particular moment, or was there a time where you thought, "Oh, I'm all right at this actually," or was there maybe it was more kind of other coaches or parents or teammates going, "You know, Reese is pretty good at this now."
I think I was aware that I was okay at it, but you've got no frame of reference, because junior rugby is a pretty small pool, and you've got no idea of the size of the other fish in the pool or in the pond, because you just play the same teams most weeks, right? Like, you're just on a circuit of Sandef North, Fairwater, St. Joe's, St. Peter's, and like rinse and repeat, and you just keep going around saying all of them. I think because apparently a couple of the parents turned to the old man and went, "He's all right, fine. He goes okay." At about 10, 11 years of age, and fortunately enough, that sort of coincided at the same sort of time that Cardiff Schools and the representative teams were, you know, you got to the age where the representative teams were starting to select players, and got into the system there. Luckily enough, started off life as centre. But I was tall. So it was interesting that under 11s, Cardiff Schools, the club team only played like 10-a-side, but the representative team played 15-a-side on a full-size pitch. I mean, must have looked like ants running around the place. But it also meant that there was different positions that needed to be filled that hadn't been filled, previously. Fullback being one of those positions that was now a new position, as it were, and nobody knew how to play fullback. Nobody knew who was going to play fullback. And the store, I trialed as a centre because I just wanted my hands on the ball and I could pass. And I'd like to think I was fairly unselfish, that I was happy enough to run, draw the last player, give it to the winger, and he could have a try. And every once in a while, I'd throw a dummy. Anyway. I was tall. I was pretty tall for my age. I had decent hands. And so Di Harris, who was coaching at the time, and Michael Rain, two great Cardiff Schools men, and Mr. Walters, Reece Walters, they all sort of got together. Right, this batch of kids, he's in, because like we think he's okay. Still 10 years of age, mind. Not going to be a superstar, but you know, at this moment in time, he's looking like he's okay. But we're not sure we're going to play him in the centre. I tell you what, we'll flip a coin. Heads is in second row. Tails, he plays fullback. And the story really was, flip a coin. I ended up at fullback. And quite frankly, my career could not have happened, because there is no way that I would go back and do what the second row was doing.
Wow, that's amazing.
Serendipity.
How many other does it? Absolutely. How many other decisions in your life have you based on the flip of a coin then? That's one of those questions.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that until we'd actually, you know, until it was at a later date, and Harry Robinson and I, Harry played in the same team, played for Wales.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Always going to be a superstar. We could tell that Harry was pretty fantastic. And, you know, anyway, Harry and I went back and went to visit, because Di Harris was a primary school teacher. So would we come in and have a look at the kids and talk to the kids? Yeah, of course we would. And then he told me the story at that point, by which time, you know, I was 21, 22. And, you know, there was definitely no going back at that point and changing positions. That's for sure.
Definitely not. Take us up the Glentarf. Many listening to this will be aware of Glentarf, the big rugby school, Welsh medium in the middle of Cardiff. What was that? Was it a natural progression then through playing with your mates and playing at a decent level? Were you playing Cardiff Schools at that point as well?
Yeah, so we went straight out from Cardiff Schools, went into Glentarf. Good crew of us from the club side, Crick as well. So, like, it was awesome. Obviously, Crick is a Welsh-speaking club, so everybody from there went en masse. We knew we were pulling good players, obviously playing with the club. And we had schools, or Welsh-speaking schools, Welsh-speaking children coming to the club anyway. And then we knew that we were going to draw on the other kids at those schools who didn't play for us, but played for the English speaking clubs. So we knew we were going to have a good side. And the two tutelage, Kerry Evans decided, or it was Kerry Evans and Hugh Llewellyn, their turn to take the year 17. And you know, there was a few of us that stayed in the representative system. And then by sort of year 10, the whole of the year 10 A team, because the first 15 is sixth form, but the A team for year 10 were all in Cardiff Schools under 15s. Like we had a pretty dominant team. Corpus Christi was the other big school, or the other really competitive school at that time, and it was generally the both of us in the final. And like we were, it was awesome, you know, just playing with your mates every week. Teachers clearly knew that we were fobbing them off for an extra 10 minutes, leaving an extra 10 minutes early at the end of the day to try and get, oh, you'd already be late for the bus and all the rest of it. And we'd never warm up. We'd just jump on the bus. You know, Mr. Evans would turn around at lads, once we're off the bus, we're going to kick off in 5 minutes to get your boots on the bus. And we're just going to go. You never warm up, you never pull a muscle. We played a really good standard and played a really good brand of rugby, moved the ball, and probably had a real, that sort of 5 years, year 70, year 11, had a real formative, or really formed the way that I viewed how I wanted the game to look and how I thought the game could be played with the right players in the team. And if everybody really bought into the concept of moving the ball. And we had, as I say, we had a pretty successful team. A lot of us got picked for representative rugby. Cardiff Cup, won the Welsh Schools Cup in year 11. So we lost in the semi-final to Brintig. They were the main school in Wales. And they had a couple of boys who got scouted to go to rugby league. They had a couple of boys in the Osprey system from an early age. We lost to them in the semi-final in year 9. And I remember turning to Mr. Evans, I'd be like, in 2 years' time, we're going to come back and we're going to win this thing. And so it was. We did them 15-10 down at the Wanderers. And I'll never forget. Like, we used to take subs with us, but the subs would never get on. It was like old school rugby where if somebody was injured, you put your subs on, but no, you kept your best 15 on the field. Anyway, one of my mates is down beneath the toilet, and he's gone to like the bushes, the far end of the field. And it just so happens I get the ball, I run a counter attack, I go down the right hand edge where all the kids are, like the school put buses on and brought the kids down to watch us play the final. Anyway, I score in the corner that Fergus is having a pee. I said his name now. That's really embarrassing. That's an awful thing for me. Anyway, I scored in the corner where my mate is having a tea. And like then, I can see him looking around panicking that all these kids are coming over and he doesn't know what to do with himself. And it was class. And then, you know, fair play, one of the boys organised that we'd all go out for a curry and you know, like recognise the fact that we'd done something really cool, and it was potentially that there was a couple of the lads moving on because it was sixth form and some of them wanted to do apprenticeships or whatever it was, and it was sort of the last time the team would do anything together, and that was awesome.
Just listening to you there and seeing the smile on your face and the laughs, and we'll edit that bit out, I'm sure. Just how important were those How important were those years playing with your mates, really having that strong bond? How important was that to you?
Oh, it's massive. It's why you play. Like, obviously, I play because I want to be good at it, and I want a professional career. But ultimately, like, that's what drives enjoyment. I we've done an event together, haven't we? And I speak quite openly and quite honestly around, if I could go back, I played for a lot of cool teams and I've played with a lot of world class players. If I could go back and have one game for any team again, I'd go back and I'd play with my mates for Glantars. Because of the level of camaraderie, because it was fun. Like, I remember quite vividly, we went on tour. So that was year 11, went into sixth form. And yeah, sixth form, great, unbelievable. Like, step up in rugby again, had a bit more lead from the teachers to do what you wanted to do, and it was awesome. But at the end of sixth form, we went on tour. We went to Canada, and at the time, I'd just been called in. I was training with Cardiff Blues, finished my A levels, and it didn't look like I was going to be able to go on tour because the school had organised tour. I wasn't part of the system. I wasn't gonna stay part of the system after school. Great, I'll go to Canada with the school and I'll stay on and I'll go and do my gap year anyway. The plan changed and then eventually I was allowed to go. Cardiff kindly agreed to let me go and do tour. And we played the very last game of tour. And again, Kerry Evans, great man, a real mentor for me. And he sort of, how was that, Reese? Yeah, it was amazing, you know, how good. And he goes, you're strictly business now, pal. Like, this is it. That's the last time you do this for fun. Like, you are all business now. And that was, at the time, I was like, oh, yeah. You're thinking all head on. Yeah, absolutely. And it's only subsequently that, it's a bit like Steve Jobs' speech, where it's only when you get to this point, you can go all the way back and start joining the dots on the way. Recognize the dots for what they are. So yeah, that was, it's a really special time, and that's why when Glantow turn up or they ring me or whatever, will you come down or would you help? Or yeah, of course I will, because it gave me some of the best times of my life and gave me some of the best mates of my life. You know, there's a group of us that are still mates now, and inevitably we catch up. How are you? How's work? Da, 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 da. Do you remember? And it turns to, oh, I saw so-and-so, and do you remember this game? Like, hell's my fiance. We'll be driving along in the car through Cardiff or wherever. And I'll point out somebody that I saw in school or somebody that we played against in school or whatever. And I go, oh, look, that's so-and-so, good player. And the running joke now is whenever I point somebody out, I say, oh, look, that's so-and-so. And she goes, let me guess, he was a good player. I go, yeah. So, yeah, it's funny. Those things sort of stick with you. I haven't been back to the Wanderers since, but I know where the bush is. And I can, if somebody wants to know, I will take them there and I'll show them where my mates got caught short.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. I mean, I asked the question kind of knowing where you were going to go with it, but I'm so glad you did mention it, because when we did do that event, it was Old Panathian's youth team and it was their first dinner, and it was the first time the club had kind of had a youth team, and you spoke so passionately and honestly and openly around the importance of it and how much it means to you, and that was a couple of years ago now, and the boys still talk about it. They still talk about hearing you talk glowingly about it, and they've kind of taken that on themselves, and it's something now that's really important, and it's not taken for granted either, which is quite clearly something that you never take for granted either.
I think you're right. I think it can be taken for granted, and it's like anything. You've got to, like, we probably do take it for granted that we had that experience, and we probably not, and or we take it for granted the work that the teachers put in and the culture and the environment that they cultivated for us to have that experience. But I don't necessarily take it for granted that I did have the experience, because I talk to other boys about, oh, what was the first 15 like for you, or what was school like for you, or what was, and they don't have that. You know, oh yeah, it was all right, but we didn't really have much of a team and we didn't do much. You know, I think that's really special. I think that's something that I'm biased because I've come through the school, but I think it's something that Glantaf does really well, and not just with the rugby team. Excuse me. It's not just with the rugby team. You go back there now, and the P department are flat out. Like I went back summer 2023 to do my work experience hours and doing my observation hours for a teaching qualification. So I, you know, inevitably, Glantaf need a favour. They're happy to ring me. I need a favour. I'll ring the head of PE. I'll ring the head of boys PE, who's a legend. And so, yeah, of course you can come in, you know, as many days as you want, whatever you need, we'll help provide it. Class. And the PE department didn't stop. Did not stop from 7, it's like school starts at 8:30, from 7 o'clock until 5:30. They are relentless. And, you know, it's, but things like that is why people remember the great time that they had in Glantaf, because the teachers don't take it for granted either. That, you know, that they want the students to have the best time they can possibly have at the school.
I mean, it's all about the environment, isn't it? And I know we'll probably talk about that in a little bit. And clearly the impact it's had on you and your pals and the rest of the boys growing up is just it shapes you in many, many ways. Yeah. What talk to us a little bit about that transition from school environment, playing with your mates, going into the blue setup. How did you handle that in the first instance?
It was pretty daunting, and to be honest, I probably wasn't really that ready to leave. I wasn't ready to go into a professional rugby environment. I'd organised this gap year, and basically for 12, 14 months, I knew, right, well, I'm going to finish school, I'm going to go on tour, and then I've got a year as a student teacher in Shawinigan Lake, amazing, and then I'm going to go on to university, and that got flipped like that. Whereby middle of A-levels, got a phone call from the academy manager at the Blues, the first team of Shortland players, because it's World Cup prep 2011. Can you go in and do pre-season with the team? We'll try and sort something out for you. We'll sort like an academy deal whereby we'll pay for your flights to go to Shawinigan Lake. Because to be fair, the academy manager at the time could see the value of what I was trying to do, and himself had trained as a PE teacher, and thought it'd be a great life experience, and you know, year one we'll cover your flights, year two you'll come back in, we'll try and sort something out with you with being with the academy. So yeah, cool, that sounds great. Finished my levels on Friday, turned up on Monday. And by Friday, there was a 3-year academy deal. Don't go to Canada, and stick around. So the plan changed fairly instantaneously, or very quickly at least. And I probably wasn't agile enough mentally to be able to let go of the original plan as much as I wanted the new plan. And I was, you know, I was adamant, like, not everybody gets a shot at professional rugby. I want this. I probably wasn't, I wasn't able to leave school, if that makes sense.
No.
And it was school is a very comfortable environment for me. I enjoyed it a lot. And professional rugby can be uncompromising and survival of the fittest. And that first year was difficult for me. Like, going on the sevens was unbelievable. It was probably the best thing I could have done. I found that adjustment from schoolboy rugby to senior men's competing against proper real players very, very difficult. And you know, at that point, I probably transitioned from playing fullback to outside for a couple of years. So it was pretty green and pretty wet behind the ears when it came to all the stuff that an outer half should be able to do. because senior rugby is definitely not like Dan Tavern, we'll throw it around and we'll give it a go from everywhere. There's a bit more to it. So I found that first year particularly was really challenging. But, you know, equally, you get a lot of growth from that and you build a lot of mental resilience from that. And as I say, the Sevens was absolutely incredible for me because it was a smaller squad. You know, like it was easier to be, and it was easier to feel a part of a family when there's less people around. Because, you know, that's how I feel about it now. And Paul John was amazing. He's now with Hong Kong. He was class. Gareth Williams, who was the defence coach for the Scarlets, Babs, he was brilliant. He's fantastic. Unbelievable human. And Richard Hodges, who's currently with Zebra, they were the three coaches. And Wayne Proctor, the Greyhound, he was a fitness man. He was a fitness coach, and he was brilliant as well. And as I say, when you're traveling as a 12-man squad, 13-man squad, 3 or 4 management, you know, you've got to be a tight-knit group. You've got no option but to get along with people and really make an effort with people. And that was brilliant for me.
Was there a moment where you thought, oh, maybe this is the way I want to go, rather than the full, so I almost said the proper game, that's not what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. I've got a great story about that, is that at the time I felt like I was, my rate of improvement at Sevens was faster than my rate of improvement at 15s. And that's inevitable because I was playing a lot more Sevens and I got my hands on the ball a lot more. And you know, when you're a young player in a professional squad, you might be lucky to get a couple of reps at, because somebody pulls out or whatever. Your pucks and goal kicking. And the great Ben Blair. Do you remember Ben Blair, fullback?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Absolutely. He was so good for me. He was good for a lot of young players. I'm practicing goal kicking. I'm having a shocker. I can't hit a good kick for love nor money. But I can hit a good drop goal because that's all I'm practicing. Because I know I'm going to play on the 7th circuit. I know I'm going to play on the 7th circuit. So I'm practicing my drop goals just as much, or probably more than I'm practicing my goal kicks. And I can't hit a good kick. And he goes, struggling today, Bash? And I go, I can't put up. And I've gone, rather play 7s than 15s. And he turns around to me, no money in 7s, Bash. This is where you want to be. And I went, oh, I don't care, like proper stubborn, to my teddy, I don't care, kicked the drop goal, walked off the field, ended up going back out in the field to do more, because obviously I felt bad that I, but there was probably a point where, it was at the time where the Olympics was being mooted as a potential opportunity for Sevens, I probably leaned towards that at the time, because I felt I was playing more when I was doing it, and I felt like I was going okay. Coincidentally, I went back to watch a couple of old clips of me playing Sevens last night. I was awful. Like, I was dreadful. but at the time, I thought I was doing okay. And then, you know, within a year, the Sevens had come and gone, and Phil Davis had come in and they'd given me an opportunity in the first team with Cardiff, and just sort of, that was my ticket to ride. And I jumped on the train and tried to not look back.
You mentioned Ben Blair there. That was one of the things I'm interested in. Who were there any other sort of players around that time that really, I mean, perhaps took you under their wing, but really gave you some good advice or helped you to stand in good stead for the rest of your career?
I think most of the boys were good.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's a daunting environment. Everybody remembers being a young kid, being brought in to train with the first team. So they try and make it as comfortable as possible for you, or try and make you feel as welcomed as possible. But, you know, once you get your boots on, there's an expectation that you perform at the level. But I was particularly lucky that a few older, more experienced players did take a shine to me. Ben Blair, because I wanted to stay out and I wanted to kick. And that was perfect for him. Xavier Rush was awesome for me. Paul Tito was great when I first turned up. Like, they were awesome.
Some great players in that squad back then.
Some unbelievable players. Mam Molotika, Daniel Jones, who ended up being transitioned to be team manager for Garda for the next couple of years, like, he was brilliant, like, fantastic for the young players. You know, like, deep down, they were, you know, they tried with the young players and wanted you to succeed. And then probably the younger crew of senior players, or the younger internationals, like Halfpenny, like, really lucky, almost forced myself on him. But, you know, we ended up, I think we're great mates. He might not say that, but we're pretty good mates. Sam Warburton, amazing. So good for me as a young player. Jamie Roberts, like, just a lot of really, really good pros who wanted to help. If only you were willing to put the work in. Like, I think that's the key.
Yeah, of course.
It can't be just, it's got to be hand up, not hand out. You know,
yeah,
you're asking for help rather than expecting help. And those boys, amazing. And, like, really lucky that, I mean, Halfpenny and I room together now, what, 13 years later, something like, oh, we did room together. Obviously, we're not playing for the same team anymore. But whenever, basically, we've played together, we roomed together and kicked together and gone for coffee and, like, awesome, amazing.
There's something really consistent there with you, isn't there, around building these relationships and forming bonds with like-minded people, whether that be through Glentav or clearly understanding kind of those people you gravitate to, whether that be kicking more with Ben Blair or having the Kiwis. I just wrote those names down there. It's probably a coincidence you're now in New Zealand playing, but probably the values and the ethos of what Kiwis were built to do and what you're built to do as well seemed quite similar. So it made sense that sort of attitude and approach you've taken to your game.
I think you rewind a bit further back than that, and, like, my folks have unbelievable work ethic. Like, the old man has an appetite and an engine. Like, and that, like, stuff like that rubs off on you. And then I suppose if that's what you see at home, that's what you emulate, and then you end up sort of gravitating towards the people that have that trait or show that trait wherever you go after that, you know? So so I think, you know, you strip it back even further, Matt, you probably look back and you go the family and the old man and the brother and my mother. But yeah, they were pretty big names. I was like, unbelievable. You walk in the office day one, or walk into the change rooms, whatever, and you'd see them and you walk, hiya, I'm Rhys. Or no, sorry, that's a lie. Hiya. They walk to you and they'd be like, hiya, I'm Xavier. And I'd be like, I know who you are, pal. You don't have to introduce yourself to me. I'm Rhys. Like, that's that type of thing. But they're all the same. You know, do you need this? Do you need that? Are you going to do any extras? If you're going to do extras, what are you going to do? Because I might do some passing, or I might do some catching, or whatever it is. Looked after us. They took us to Merthyr Mawr. There's a crew of us that went up to Merthyr Mawr to the sand dunes. And I was on, you know, I was, at the time, I wasn't even being paid because we hadn't organised my contract. So I am training for the love of the game at that point, and quite happy to do so. And those boys trained. We go for brekkie afterwards. You coming for brekkie? I'll come to breakfast. No problem. And then you turn up. What do you want for breakfast? Oh, no, you're okay. What do you want for breakfast? You're like, you're a young player. You're not getting paid enough to do this. What do you want for breakfast? Sour shout. Like, stuff like that is, you know, good humans.
Yeah, and that's the phrase, isn't it? That is the phrase. Just good humans. That's all we want to be. So I guess, you know, any Cardiff boy playing any sport, really, you know, to play for Cardiff is fantastic and is such a massive thing. But what was it like being able to represent your country as well? Talk us through playing for Wales and getting that first call up.
Yeah, it's pretty, well, I didn't believe that it was actually a call up at the time. I thought my leg was being pulled. We were in the car heading down to West Wales. My mate, whose old man used to coach, that I told that I was going to play professional rugby. So he and I were driving down to West Wales, and we came up through a bad patch of signal. or a missed call off a number I didn't recognise. And then got a phone call off Caroline Morgan, the PA to the national squad. And hi, Reese, it's Caroline Morgan. You've just been picked for Wales. Training starts on Monday. Yeah, all the best. You know, like the old, somebody's pulling my leg here, because Priestland had gone down the night before. Riding for the Scarlets, he got injured. Oh, yeah, all the best. Didn't really think anything of it. She goes, no, check your emails. There's an email there with all the details. You're going to go to St. Athan. You're going to train here. Da, 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 da. Because the Lions were training at the Vale at the time. And that was pretty spectacular. The first cap was unbelievable. I think there was about seven or eight of us, maybe nine even. Went out to Japan 2013, got our caps. Well, lucky I did it with a couple of good mates like Andres Pretorius. He's another one at the Blues that I gravitated towards. Unbelievable human. Does the right thing because it's the right thing. Even if it means that he's going to miss out on something. Dries was there, so looked after me. And that was just unbelievable. And then you get a taste for it and you get hungry and you want more and you want more of it right now. And how I think, like Sean Edwards at the end of tour, we won the first game, we lost the second game to Japan. Really young team. And learned a lot off tour. But the main thing I learned was Sean Edwards going, lads, international rugby, test rugby is called test rugby for a reason, because it's meant to test you. Now, you've had a taste of that. If you go back and you train like a club player, you'll never be an international player. But if you train like an international player, you might be lucky enough to carry on being one. And then, so, okay, fine, let's reset the level that we think we need to be operating at. And that was a really, well, as you can tell, that's 10 years ago, 11 years ago now, and that's still something that's stuck with me and something that sits in the back of my mind that I'm prepping every week, because I need to be prepping like an international player if I want to be an international quality player. And how different was that step up? You know,
it's really open-ended.
Yeah, it's such an open-ended question, and I appreciate the step, but it's a step for a reason. But yeah, it's like the game is faster, less time to make the decision. Even playing against a tier two country, who are pretty fantastic, because in 2 years' time they knocked South Africa out at the world, or they knocked South Africa over at the World Cup, which was a massive relief to all of us who'd lost to Japan. I was like, see, we told you they were good. We told you they were flipping dead these Japanese players. Everything that goes with it, and even more so, like when you play against like a tier one, I don't know how we define tiers, but there we are, but so-called tier one countries, or you play in the Six Nations or something like that with a scrutiny. Like Japan was fairly low scrutiny; it was just the rugby that was really intense. But when you've got the carnival that goes and the circus that goes around it, it can be a pretty lonely place, pretty intense. Pressure cooker environment, but equally, you know, it's a bit like the butterflies on Christmas Eve when you're a kid. You know, that is like if you turn around on Christmas Eve to a young child and say, "Don't worry, Father Christmas isn't going to come," they'd look at you as a like, "What do you mean he's not coming? I've got all this, you know, all this excitement and nervousness and anxiety and all the rest of it." And I have to remind myself, or I had to remind myself of that. It was like if somebody turned around and said, "Don't worry, Reese, you don't have to play on the weekend for Wales," I'd be fuming with them. So, you know, that's sort of, you got to remind for all the step up in intensity and all the rest of it, you got to remind yourself that you want to be there, and you'd be annoyed if you weren't.
That is a cracking analogy. I can definitely get my head around that. I definitely think I'd rather tell an international rugby player he wasn't playing for Wales than tell a 4-year-old the Father of Christmas isn't playing.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a battle I just don't want to face. I can explore that for ages. there's a word I've written down about five times, and I think we'll definitely come back to it in a bit. But what, talk us through that transition from the blues to the scarlets then, you know, how did that come about to start with? And was it something that excited you? What were your emotions kind of leaving Cardiff?
So I think, like, it was, there's a lot of a backstory that we haven't really got too much time to go into, but ultimately I felt like I really wanted to give playing outside half a go. And, you know, I thought to myself, I don't want to get to, I know I can play fullback and fullback will always be there. And so it's a lot easier to go from number 10 to number 15 later in my career than it is to go from number 15 to number 10 later in my career. Right. Going to work and learn off Stephen Jones is probably an opportunity that won't come again. And if anybody is qualified to tell me that I have or haven't got what it takes to do it, it's probably a bloke with 100 plus caps for Wales and two British Lions tours.
I mean, it's worth a coffee or two, isn't it? Just to pick his brains, yeah.
You know? So that's how it sort of came about, and it got dragged out a little bit. In my head it got dragged out. It probably was less than a week in reality. And by the end I was pretty glad to just get announced and get it done. I'd like to think that I did the right thing by everybody. I walked in the office to tell Danny Wilson to his face, I've got an offer from the Scarlets. I'm going to consider it. And then when I'd made my decision, I walked in the office again and said, this is the decision I've made. I appreciate everything you've done. I'll continue to do my best for Cardiff until the end of the season. Did the same with Peter Thomas, because I felt like Peter deserved that as well. Because he'd been wonderful to me, and he was a great human, and the depth that Cardiff rugby has to Pete is enormous. And told him the same thing. And then it was like, right, well, we just got to roll the sleeves up, and if I play again for Cardiff, I've got to show that I care about the place, because I do. And actions speak louder than words here. So, you know, I've got to try and help us win as many games as we can. Fortunately, not long after announcing that I signed, we had a couple of derbies and I kicked a couple of winners. First one against the Dragons, second one against Scarlets, which was, you know, like a great way of, here we are then. You know, I told you I'm doing my best and here I am doing my best. That's not to say if I'd have missed, I'd have been doing or trying any less. It's just the way that it goes, unfortunately. But you know what I mean? Like, it's
a, yeah, absolutely.
Perception can be reality. And yeah, it was a difficult decision. Of course it is. Like, Cardiff was comfortable. It was a bit like leaving school again. You know, Cardiff is comfortable. I've got my mates there. I know the way the place works. I know what they want out of me. But I felt it was the right thing to do for me. Have you ever watched Draft Day?
What? One of the best films of the business ever.
Yeah, I'm familiar with this one. Vontae Mack, no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, in the last couple of days before actually signing for the Scarlets, I just wrote down on a piece of paper, BYS, no matter what, and stuck it in my pocket and thought, like, right, I'm going to walk around with like a Scarlets player for a couple of days here, and or like a player that's leaving Cardiff, not as a Scarlets, but, you know, like, and there's a difference between two. Am I comfortable with that decision? And yep, all right, then here we go. And then got to back the Scarlets. First three games of the season, win Norton 3. Can't win a game for love nor money. I'm playing like absolute garbage. Cardiff's a 3 from 3, top of the league. Gareth Anscombe's playing 10 like a legend for Cardiff. And I was like, oh my God, what have I done? What have I done? And then, you know, fortunately, we picked it up that year. And I think we won 20 of the next 21 games, or, you know, something outrageous like that, in the league. Won an away semi against Leinster for the first time. Any team in the league had won an away semi. Did it with 14 men. James Davis on the wing, absolutely outrageously good. And then we went to Munster and put 40 on them in the final the week after, and it was like,
Oh, here we are. That was good. That was a good decision to leave Carlos on there. And not admit, if we hadn't won the league, I'd have still sat there and been like, the growth in my game and the growth as a 10 was huge. And it was awesome, and it was a great group. It was a brilliant squad that was assembled. Everybody encouraged to be themselves, and we were all completely different. Like, it was a really eclectic group of people. PVAC led it from the front really well, and yeah, just a great few years.
I vividly remember that, particularly the semi. I mean, just on one hand at the time being like, yeah, this makes sense, this Scarlet side totally deserve this. On the other hand, being like, what on earth is happening here? This is yeah, incredible to watch. And to be part of it, that's been special.
Oh, it was outrageous. And I remember we had Hadley Bastard, a good mate of mine, and actually was on the bench at 10, so we didn't carry a 10 on the bench that for those two games, for the semi and final. We just went we went with PVAC at the time. His mentality was, I'm going to pick who I think the best 23 players are, and I'm going to get them in the match day squads, whether or not they fill the traditional position requirements of the numbers that are on their back. So we had Liam Williams on the wing, Hadley Bart on the bench at 10. So we were pretty tight in the game. We had a line out on the left-hand side. I was aware that 3 points would be big for us, like really important. So I got to the scrum half and I said, Evzy, Johnny Evers was 9 at the time. I said, Evzy, like, we'll go up the deaths around the corner, and I'll sit in the pocket and I'll have a pocket free. I'll drop goal. Like, it wasn't a play that was scripted, but I felt like that's what we probably needed. Anyway, just as the line out set, ref goes his whistle, 10, you're off. And I'm looking across, and Parksy stood there like, yeah, here we go, ready to go. And I'm just like, arms wide open at PVAC, like mouthing him, what are you doing? Like, lost the plot completely lost. Like, went to apologise to him after the game. I was like, I'm so sorry that I did that. I didn't, you know, just so you understand, this is what I had. It wasn't in our playbook. This is what I called. This is why I lost the plot. And he was like, nah, you're all good. Like, you know, thanks for coming to apologise. Emotions are running high, et cetera, et cetera. Just don't do it again. Yeah, cool, no problem. I can do that. As it was, we didn't run the drop goal sequence, but got a penalty. At this point, haven't got a kicker on the field. So Liam Williams is now goal kicking in a semi-final away from home. He bangs two over, and the change room after that game is possibly one of the best change rooms I've ever been in.
Yeah,
ever.
Good.
Ever. You know, just we used to sing Sospan Bach after a win. We sort of brought it in that season. We brought it in when we went away in Cardiff, actually. Like, that was the first time we did it. And it was as loud, like the GPS vest's box was shaking. The walls must have been shaking. It was unbelievable because we were aware of like how enormous it was. Away went from home, 14 men, odds stacked against us. I'm sure I saw in the week like a poster advertising amongst the Leinster final for the week later. You know, like, nobody anticipated.
If you needed any more validation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's pretty special.
There's a couple of bits. It's quite clearly to you, and I'll explain why I say this. You've said good humans quite a lot. You've worked with a load, you've played with a load. Doing the right thing, the way you spoke to Danny Wilson, the way you spoke to Peter Thomas as well. Again, many listening that know the history, sadly Peter's no longer here, but the history with the club, that respect is so important to you, isn't it? And doing the right thing by the person that's kind of in front of you. To some and to you, I'm sure, that's an obvious thing, but that isn't always the case, is it? You know, that isn't always the case, but with you, it's quite clearly doing the right thing of being a good human. That's what people say about you, and I don't say that to embarrass or for any other reason than just to say it's quite clearly you live by that, and that is how people see you as well. You mentioned your name. You mentioned a few people there, the likes of Sean Edwards, other coaches, Dyke Flanagan. They'll always say the same thing, you know, really, really good guy. that's the first thing they always say. So just, I wanted to explore that a little bit more. Just, is that come from your background as well, or is that just how you really see the world?
I think
great, by the way.
Like, thank you. I think like that probably you're shaped by the environment in which you're brought up, right? Like so that probably goes a long way back to mum and dad and the way that the way that they see the world and the way that they were brought up by their parents. I just, you know, like, it's nice to be important. It's important to be nice. And like, sometimes you got to be cruel to be kind as well. Sometimes, you know, you've got to deliver a fairly honest message, quite bluntly at times, but you're doing it because it's the right thing for the person in front of you. But like, I always think, like, as you say, you do the right thing because it's the right thing. If it was me, how would I want to be treated here? And how would I want this message to be delivered? It's a mixture of everything, I suppose. You know, great environment at home, great mates, chapel, great people there, great people at school. Like, you know, you're just really lucky that you are surrounded by the people that influence you positively, and then you come across a couple of people, or you get a couple of situations where, oh, I'm not sure I'd have delivered that way, or I'm not sure how that's made me feel. And it probably hardens your resolve that, oh, okay, well, this is actually how I think, this is how I do it if I ever got to that situation. And also, right, like, word spreads really fast. Like, really fast. You know, and I'm not saying you do it because you don't want to get a bad reputation, but it's a really small village, rugby. And if head coaches can ring each other easy, agents ring each other, players, oh, you've got a kid coming from so-and-so. Right, well, I'll ring one of the lads at the club. I know him. Okay, ring one of the boys. What's this guy that we're signing? What's he like? And, like, the first two sentences are key, because after the first two sentences, people forget the next three paragraphs. What's he like? Oh, well, and that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Opinion formed, end of. Whereas, you know, if that initial sentence is, yeah, he's great, or yeah, good human, or works hard, or something positive, that's it. You're off on the right foot then. Like, I remember going to first morning of secondary to Glantards, and the last thing mum says as I walk out the door, you don't get a second chance at a first impression. Okay, that's a lead, no problem.
So true that. Well, that's definitely something that people attribute to you. So that's something that I know is difficult. We're not very good at taking compliments or delivering them, but that's absolutely true. The other word, which kind of I first picked up really about you when we connected, was kind of towards the end of the Scarlets bit, uncertainty around contracts. You and injuries have not had the best relationship in that sort of back end of the Scarlets period. The word was resilience. You come across as incredibly resilient, both on and off the pitch. And one argument would be, well, you've got to be. That's just what you need to do to survive in that cutthroat world, as you said at the start of the conversation. But then to go, right, well, if this is going to be the end of this period, what am I doing next? You know, you weren't necessarily sure what the next part was going to look like. How were you feeling at that point and coming to the end of the Scarlets bit before this next journey? What was that like for you?
It's not easy. Like, it's not, everybody likes a bit of certainty, don't they? So that's the first bit. I think on the coming to the end of the Scarlets, I think the club were very good with a lot of boys and being able to give them a fairly definitive answer 6 months out from the end of their deal. With all the turbulence that was going on and all the restructuring and all the rest of it, you know, I was called in the office, and thank you very much, but we're afraid that there won't be a deal here for you next year. Fine, no problem. So the first thing with that is, right, well, my feet are here, so I've got to make the most of the next six months. I've got to try and help, and I've got to try and contribute. If that's with a number 10 jersey on, a number 22 jersey on, or just with a training jersey on, I'm all in, because Selkin isn't going to get us anywhere, right? So, even if I can't have a big influence on the result of the weekend, I can have a big influence on how the team is prepped, because I'll run the Tesla team, the backholders, the non-involved. I'll coach them, I'll prepare them, so you don't need to worry about whether or not you're going to have a quality training session in the week. And everybody wants to be picked, so that's difficult. That's obviously there's a level of frustration there, because everybody's competitive. Nobody gets to the level that we play at and is happy to be not playing, or happy to not play. In terms of the uncertainty, I was fairly aware that it was going to be, I was aware that it was going to be a bumpy period from the point of view of, it was difficult getting an extension at the Scarlets. Wasn't quite as straightforward as the negotiations had been. The global climate, economic climate within rugby was rocky at best. And here I was as a player who had a battle with injuries, was in and out of a team, and was off contract. So, you know, and nobody knew what they were doing next year. So, like, bit of a lethal concoction, really, from that point of view. But again, you prep yourself. Hells and I had sort of had a chat about it. And I was fairly confident that if I wanted to carry on, there'd be something there. It'd be late in the day. And it was very late in the day. but equally, you know, I was, if that didn't happen, then, you know, I tried my best, and I've maximized as much as I can, and I've done as much as I can. And if this is the end of the road, it's going to be difficult to be the end of the road. But, you know, it hasn't been for lack of trying, and it hasn't been for lack of work ethic. And we've had a good run, and we'll go on to the next thing. Unfortunately, the show goes on, at least for another year. Down here, and equally, I was very aware that I wanted to do something that I wanted to do, you know, whereby, does this spin my wheels? Am I doing this for a paycheck, or am I doing this because I want to do it? And, you know, it's going to get me up out of bed every morning, and I'm not going to feel like I'm going to work, and it won't be a grind. And I remember talking to a couple of people. And one of them, a mutual friend of ours, and he said, well, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know, but I'll know when I see it. And this opportunity came up, and I was like, right, this is what I want to do. Had a great chat. Again, complete luck, sliding doors, serendipity, whatever you want to call it. And whereby an old coach of mine was here, and they were looking for a 10, and he said, oh, have you ever thought about this? Like, this is the sort of profile person and player that you're looking for. I got a guy, I'll ring him up. And this sort of the ball just started rolling from there, really. But yeah, it was difficult, but I think like I was reading earlier, and like Steve Hansen put it really well, like, if something comes up and you haven't got a plan, then you're panicking. Mm. But if something comes up and you've got a plan for it, then there's no need to panic, because all you do is you start actioning the plan that you've got.
Yeah.
So that, I thought, I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's really sensible. That's like, that's almost common sense. And so I suppose, reflecting on it, that's probably, you know, I knew I had the World Cup worked in the bank, you know, coming in, so that I'd have stuff to keep myself busy. And my agent was, Reece, there'll always be a deal for you because of the profile player that you are and the different positions you cover and all the rest of it, and your goal kicker. It's just going to be, it's going to be on you. And it depends on how long you want to wait and at what point you want to pull the trigger on the next thing. So, yeah, it was interesting. I'm not sure I want to do it again. But equally, you know, it was kind of refreshing just not knowing. Yeah, I've always been quite lucky that I've known before Christmas where I'm going to be, and here I was at the end of May, finishing up the Scarlet's contract finishes at the end of May, and oh gosh, what are we going to do next? What are we going to do tomorrow? I don't know. Should be good.
It'll work out.
Yeah.
Tell us about down there. Then you've referenced a few times. You've had the offer. You're in Dunedin now, South Island, New Zealand, and playing with the Otago Highlanders. What is that experience like so far?
It's pretty fantastic. It is. And you know, I'm not saying that because I'm trying to convince people that I believe it. Like I believe it in my bones that it's fantastic, you know. It's a young squad, it's a pretty young coaching staff. But that like you can either look at that as, oh gosh, there's no experience there, what are they gonna do? And the old Alan Hansen, you never win anything with kids.
Yeah.
Or you look at it as though, oh great, this is a fresh slate. This is a clean page. Here we go. We can build the culture and we can build the environment and we can build the team that we want. That is hand up, not hand out. That is we, not me. Yeah, there's gonna be some challenges this year. That's for sure. That's you know, that's life, isn't it? But. It's been fantastic. Like this preseason has been brilliant. I'm 30 years of age and I've run a career best Bronco fitness score. And
really?
Smashed my old score. Yeah, so previously, you know, I've knocked about 10 seconds off my previous score and there's no line to line running. It's all been on free. Like it's just opened my eyes to a different way of doing things. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying the way that Wales or the way that it's done in Northern Hemisphere is wrong. This is the way that they see it, and this is the way that the SNC want to run their preseason. All right, cool. I'm here, so let's buy into that. There's no point in sitting there and being like, oh, we don't do this back home. I've made the decision to come here. I've made the decision that, right, like we do 5 days on grass.
Yeah.
We'd never do 5 days on the bounce on the grass back home. And I was a bit like, ooh, this is... And then hell's on the phone. Well, Reece, you made the decision to go there, so, you know, you've got to buy into this. Oh, yeah, I do, actually. You're right there. And it's been awesome. It spins my wheels. I get up every morning, 10, 15 minutes to work, the sun is shining, I'm plastered in factor 50 from 11:30 in the morning onwards. But it's been great. Awesome group of people. Really exciting new competition, new way of playing, new way of looking at the game and building a training week. Currently it's everything that I hoped that it would be when I jumped on a plane from Heathrow, or I don't know, whenever it was, 13th of November. So the season starts, our season opener is the 24th of Feb. We play Moana Pacifica, which is the team that Stephen Jones is coaching, under the roof here at Forsyth Bar, on a Saturday night. That'll be awesome. Like, really looking forward to it. The boys tell me that when the place is rocking and it's a firm pitch, there's no dew, there's no wind, it's going to be a fast game, which I'm looking forward to. Unfortunately, I got to keep reminding people, despite the fact that Lee Halfpenny has signed for the Crusaders, I was the first to sign for a New Zealand Super Rugby team, right? It's my record. But he will be, if selected for both of us, say hypothetically we're both selected for the first game of the season, he will be the first to play for New Zealand Super Rugby team because they play on Friday night. But like both of us are on the, both of us, have you seen, I don't know what film it is. Oh, it's like when they've got, is it Paul Rudd? The Ant-Man, and he's there with a bottle of something.
Yeah, okay.
Across a table, and it's like he's talking to his mate. He's like, "Hey, look at us. Who'd have thought? Not me." And we'll be on the phone. Lee and I will be on the phone to each other once a week, every couple of weeks. "Hey, who'd have thought, mate? Not me. Not me." Like,
I love that.
Pinching ourselves a bit that we've ended up where we have.
So bloody excited for you. Like, well, for both of you, like, obviously, but
thank you.
I'm so excited. I've never had a New Zealand team, but I certainly have now. So I think there'll be another jersey that's coming into the collection shortly. So it goes without saying that we wish you all the very, very best for that, mate. And hopefully there's a little bit longer left to go on that journey. Conscious of, I've kept you for so long already, there is one thing I want to talk to you about.
All good.
Before the big question, you mentioned it right at the start, and you mentioned imposter syndrome around it, and I want to just talk a little bit about that and how it felt. But being selected for the World 15, playing against the Barbars at Twickenham, go.
Unbelievable.
Just talk about
unbelievable.
That.
So we were driving to, I was in the car, Lift Club, Phil Price and I, great guy Phil Price. He's one of the boys that sort of got caught in the restructuring of Welsh rugby as well. Great professional, great human. And we're in the car, and Brad Moore rings me up. "Patrick, what are you doing at the end of May? And 27, 28 for me this year?" "Not too much, Brad. Unless we make a final." Which, you know, at the moment our league standing doesn't look likely that we're going to make the final. Do you reckon you play in the World 15 for me? I mean, what's the goal with that? I mean, he starts like reeling off all these players that are agreed to play in the team. He's like, I'm looking for a 10. Any chance? Yeah, I could probably play in that team with Charles Niatau, Semi Radrada, Nani Lamape, Nick Phipps, Izzy Folau. It was outrageous. At the time, I think Corabetti was meant to play for us, but he got injured, so they pulled in Kenny, little Fijian winger. He was unbelievable. And I got really excited. Awesome. And it was on the Sunday. It was on a Sunday afternoon, Twickenham. Yeah, of course I'll do it, no problem. Got to Park Scarlett's. I'm an usher at my mate's wedding on the Saturday. Right, this is a blow. So I'm back on the blower to Brad the next morning. "Listen, Brad, if this is a deal breaker, there's no problem, because I appreciate you ran. What's the chance?" And he goes, "Well, you're not going to miss your mate's wedding, so leave it with me and I'll have a chat with Steve Hansen, because he's head coach. I'm just running the backs. And hopefully he'll let you nip back to Cardiff, go to your mate's wedding, and as long as you're back in the hotel by whatever time on Saturday night, I don't see what the issue is. It's only team run. You'll know your work, etc., etc.
Yeah,
fine, no problem." So then, they agreed that. So I do the training all week, Friday night, we're out for food with the team, 10 o'clock Friday night, jumped in the car, drove back down the M4. Got to my mate's wedding, did that, left that a bit early. Like, I explained to him, so I rang him, I went for a coffee, I went, "You know your wedding?" And he goes, "Yeah." So "I've got a game that weekend." He goes, "You're not doing that to me." I said, "No, I'm not doing it to you. Do you mind if I do this?" "Oh yeah, of course, mate, that, of course you can, that's no problem." Yeah, brilliant. So that was awesome. I remember just as I'm leaving, all the boys are leaving this restaurant, the management, everybody have gone out, but the boys have gone home back to the hotel early. And just as I'm walking out, "Steve, Reese, come here." I was like, "Oh gosh." I know I've cleared everything with him. He leans over and goes, shakes my hand and goes, have a great day tomorrow, drive safe, I'll see you Sunday morning. Amazing.
What
amazing. And so first thing he does on Sunday morning, comes across for breakfast. How was yesterday? How are you feeling? Are you fresh? Yeah, great. Awesome. I'm glad you had a good time. Head on for this afternoon now. Yeah, brilliant. And then that was it. Brad was wicked. We had a great time reconnecting. Went to a couple of coffees in Teddington. In terms of the imposter syndrome.
Sorry to interrupt you there. Apologies. But just that, before you get into that bit, I know it will 15 bar bars. Okay. You're still representing a great group of people. There is professional athletes and the way to look after people there. What an unbelievable example of just doing the right thing for the right person in that moment. I mean, it's pretty incredible for both of them.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. It was fantastic. So you sort of sat there day one, you go in, you shake people's hands, you go and get your kit, you go and get your headshot, you go up to the room, and I was rooming with Adam Hastings, he was the other 10 in the squad.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I looked down at the kit bag, and my kit bag had number 22 on it, and his kit bag had number 10. So, well, I guess you're starting then, and he just burst out laughing. And then that was it. And then, you know, boys come down, Rodrada comes down, hi, how are you? I'm Semi. Bill Matter comes in, hi, I'm Bill. Just everybody, and you're looking around the room thinking to yourself, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to play with these guys. And then you get on the training field and they're, like, it's a universal language. The game is a universal language. As soon as you work out somebody's foot pattern or whatever it is, and you're just like, oh my gosh, these guys, I've just got to give them the ball. Like, what am I doing on the field? I am just worked out fairly quickly that my job that week was not to, was to facilitate highlights moments for everybody else. And the boys used to, the boys wound me up, because like I put a picture because they wanted to try and promote the game and put a picture up of me passing the ball with note to self. Every time the ball's in my hands, it's not somebody else's. And that sort of like a couple of the lads sort of latched onto that. And we were zipping the ball around in training. I was like, lads, like, what's going on? They're like, mate, every time the ball's in our hands. And they sort of taking the mick. But, yeah. So everybody recognises, like, we are playing in an unbelievable team here. We've just got to give these phenomenal athletes the ball and let them get on with it and just not get in the way. And, yeah, one of those days that you're just like, this is... And it was like a twin death match in the middle of the field, Terry Rodrada against East Fijian centre, played for the All Blacks. He, you know, swapped the eligibility, plays for Toulon. No, he doesn't play for Toulon. He plays for Toshiba. I can't think what his name is. Either way, it was like front row seats to Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. Like, it was outrageous. And just sat in the changing room before the game, looking around and be like, oh my gosh, how have I ended up here? You know, and Stiles made the decision that they wanted to, and they picked the team that they want to pick. And I'm just sort of sat there thinking, I couldn't buy a game this year. And I sat in a changing room with, like, people who are going to go to the World Cup and they're going to boss the World Cup. They're going to be unbelievable at it. And just a fantastic, fantastic week.
Totally appreciate it. Imposter syndrome, wondering why you're there, you know, for the toss of a coin back in the day, back on Lander Fields, or you've earned your own luck over the years. You know, I think you certainly earned your place there. But, yeah, that sounds class, to be fair. Does sound really sweet in that environment.
it was pretty fantastic, yeah.
Very last question. So, name of this podcast is Where's Your Clubhouse? That special place for you, you feel safe, that you can do you, be whatever you want to be, not being judged. So I will pose that question to you now. Rhys Patchell, where is your clubhouse?
Where is my clubhouse? I guess anywhere with a bag of balls, a set of posts, a kicking tee, and a pair of boots. Like, that's the first thing. Like, that to me is not work. as much as it is an element of the work that I do. But I know whenever it is that I finish, as long as I'm physically able to do so, I will be. Whenever life gets a little bit complicated or I need 5 minutes to myself, that's where you'll find me. Just able to clear, just unpick problems one thing at a time. Or just, right, that's cool, but I just want to clear my head and kick some balls here, and then I'll come back and I'll deal with the problems. Whatever it is, that's pretty cool to me. Anywhere around water, I like water, the beach, rivers, that type of stuff, very soothing. Jump in the water, swim in the water, whatever it is, but I like having water fairly close. And then, like, professionally would be the physio room. The physio room is like a sanctuary in pro sport. It used to be at the Scarlets, Wayne James, the baggage master, his room was the new physio room, if you like.
Okay.
Where the boys used to go and have a coffee and sack or talk or, you know, whatever. And in other places I've been, it's been the physio room. And you know, away from professional rugby, I suppose it's like anywhere that your tight group of mates are, that could be, you know, it's a fairly transportable clubhouse. The clubhouse is just the environment, not necessarily a place. If that makes sense, it's not geographically stuck in a single place. It's just, you know, wherever a group of us are able to get together. That might be in London, that might be in West Wales, it could be in Cardiff, it could be wherever, that there's a few of us who are able to sit down. Like, I don't drink, just don't like the taste, so I'll be there with a pint of Coke or a Diet Coke or whatever, and the boys are having a pint or they're having a coffee or, you know, whatever it is. It's not for me, the clubhouse isn't a, it can be, in some elements it is, a geographically stuck location. That's the word I'm looking for, a location. And in other elements, it's, you know, anywhere that there's a few of us together and just chewing the fat,
like-minded people.
Yeah. Like, I saw something like on Instagram when I was flicking through on some reel or whatever. And it's something, it goes something along the lines of like, it's the people you hitch your wagon to that are the most important, not necessarily the place you end up. And like the older, this is getting really deep and a bit, but like the older, and I'm not old, but the more experienced I become, there we are, that's a different way of saying it. The more I recognize, yeah, maybe that is the way it is. It's more about hitching your wagon to the right people, and you probably end up where you want to end up anyway, rather than pinning it all on a single location or a single destination.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's not deep at all. It's just it just is. And I've got maybe 8 years more experience than you, if we use that word. But it is, I'm finding the relationships and friendships that I always thought would be there aren't necessarily there anymore, for no bad reasons. Nothing bad's happened, but you just gravitate to people with similar values and similar outlooks, and just that's the way it is. And as you say, you attach yourself to them, and that's where the good stuff comes from.
Yeah, I think, you know, just as they're there at the start, that's cool, and they were there at the start, and that was wicked. And they were there because you needed them to be there, but then people's paths take them in different directions, and that's also all right as well.
Absolutely. Well, mate, I could chew your ear off for a lot longer. You've got your day to get on with, and I've got a bed to find somewhere. Reese, I really, really appreciate your time, mate. So much there to unpick. I've made loads of notes, and I'll really, really enjoy sharing this with everyone. I think there's so much there to take away. So goes without saying again, very, very best of luck.
Indonesia and with the Highlanders will certainly be watching. And I hope everything goes really, really well for you.
Thanks, mate. I loved it.
So thank you for making it this far. We really hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as we did. We certainly took a lot away from it, and it's important to us to hear your feedback. Let us know what you think. Please leave a review, leave us a rating, and it would mean an awful lot to us to hear your feedback. Please stick with us. We look forward to welcoming you soon back into the clubhouse. And it's really exciting, some of the guests we've got coming up for the rest of the series. So I'll leave you one question. I'm sure you can guess what it is. And that one question is, where is your clubhouse? See you soon.